Projektionen, Kinogespräche wird präsentiert von podriders.de, das Podcast-Netzwerk.
So, heute haben wir eine besondere Episode, nämlich eine Episode zum Black Cinema hier bei den Positionen. Eine ganz besondere Folge, insofern auch noch jemand eingeladen ist, nämlich Julia Weigel. Hallo Julia.
Hallo, grüß dich Sebastian, schön, dass ich dabei sein darf.
Julia, wir werden heute... Ich sage das auch erstmal so, ich freue mich natürlich auch sehr, dass du dabei bist. Ich wollte schon nach vorne preschen. Ich freue mich sehr, dass wir das heute machen können, weil es ein Thema ist, was in Deutschland nahezu überhaupt nicht diskutiert wird, nämlich Black Cinema. Wir bekommen von dem, was unter dieses Label des US-amerikanischen Kinos fällt, so gut wie nicht zu sehen, nur eine Spitze dessen, was es eigentlich alles gibt. Und wir haben uns zwei wunderbare Filmemacher eingeladen, mit denen wir darüber sprechen, was eigentlich Black Cinema in der Gegenwart und in der Zukunft sein kann. Deswegen werden wir natürlich in dieser Episode auf Englisch sprechen und jetzt auch gleich switchen und unsere Gäste, nämlich Skinner Myers und Mehrabi Jarima, begrüßen. So, I'm very happy to have you both on the show. Skinner, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm well, sorry. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. Yeah.
Okay. I'm really happy to have you on the show. And to all the people who don't know you, Skinner Myers is a filmmaker, actor, and photographer. He studied at Columbia Brooklyn College, USC School of Cinematic Arts. Correct me if I tell something wrong. Mm-hmm. He is at the moment teaching at University of Colorado Boulder. And his latest film was The Sleeping Negro, which was shown at the International Film Festival in Mannheim, where we've met.
Yes.
And we started this conversation about black cinema. So I'm very, very happy that we can talk about that in detail on this episode.
Me too. Yeah, we met in the hotel. Well, we had the start of the conversation was in the hotel lobby at like 3 a.m.
Yeah, it went on till 4 a.m. and yeah, we had a few drinks, but
yeah, it was fun.
Keep that aside. Yeah. we do not have a lot of drinks at the moment. We're sober. Yeah, Julia, do you want to introduce our second guest, Mehrabi Jarima?
Of course I want to do that, especially because I was hoping that you would actually talk about how the two of you met, because now I can talk about how Mehrabi and I met, because I am a programmer with the International Munich Film Festival, and I picked Residue, Mehrabi's feature-length debut for our festival in 2021, last summer. And I would also say we had a couple of fun nights talking a lot the entire night drinking a few beers and then just like exchanging thoughts and sort of like meeting other filmmakers from other countries, which is a rare thing to do these days. So Merawi, how was that for you before I say a few more words about your biography and who you are?
No, it's funny. I almost forgot that I was there for a film festival because we had so much fun. It just felt like we was getting together, you know, meeting homies and stuff. It was a good time. So we definitely drank more than Skinner and Sebastian. You know, that's no question. So that's that.
I would doubt that.
Just to give you guys an idea, like Merawi and his fiance, you're not married by now. Are you married by now? You and Chani?
No, not yet. Okay. Not yet.
So anyways, the two of them came and they wanted to stay for a couple of nights and then head somewhere else in Europe. And then they ended up staying in Munich for an entire week or even 10 days, which was amazing. Yeah. It was so much fun.
People in Berlin were waiting on us. You know, we had some homies coming in from Austria who were supposed to meet us. We was like, yeah, we're just going to stay here in Munich. It's cool.
No, it was cool.
You can explore a lot of things in Munich. No,
Julia bribed us with beer and cheese.
And films. And other things. Exactly. And funny, beautiful
and
people.
Rain.
Lovely.
And a lot of rain and rain. So anyway, so I should probably disclaim that Merawi's German premiere sort of like fell into the water because we had an outdoor screening planned and it was thunderstorm. So we decided to go out for dinner and then celebrate the premiere the next day at an actual cinema.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so a little bit about Merawi Gerima, who is the son of two filmmakers. So filmmaking is sort of like in his family because he is the son of Haley Gerima and Shirikiana Gerima. I'm going to ask a question, which I always ask Merawi, because it's just a very fun question, but I'm going to ask that a little tiny bit later, because I found one statement about you, which I just love, and it sort of like describes you perfectly, I think, which is Filmmaker Magazine described you as a rebellious college student, which I just love. So maybe you can tell us a little tiny bit yourself why Filmmaker Magazine actually calls you a rebellious college student. Yeah.
That is funny. I read the same quote today. And I really love it.
That's funny as hell. I honestly, I don't know. I don't know where they got that from. Maybe just every time I'm talking about film school, I'm always talking shit about the school I went to and all that kind of stuff. But it's just funny as hell because my dad, like we were going through some documents or some shit, like some online article came up where like this white dude from UCLA or who went to UCLA was just like remembering his first time seeing what's that Bogdanovich film? Paper Moon?
Paper Moon.
Yeah, he's remembering fondly his first time seeing this classic film and all this kind of shit. Including the moment when, I guess he said rambunctious, oh no, bombastic Ethiopian student Haile Gerima cursed out the director, who called him racist and all that kind of shit, and said you're disparaging this young black girl in this film and all this other kind of shit. But just like how he remembered that and just kind of like dismissed Haile as like some crazy student or whatever, but like it was really about like how beautiful he thought the film was and shit. So I don't know. Filmmaker Magazine, I think, is, you know, I enjoyed the article. We had a great talk, great interview before they wrote it. So it must have been something I said.
You kind of have to say that right now. Anyways, I just thought it's like a super perfect bridge to where we are heading in our conversation today. And then also, I mean, like we already talked about Residue, which world premiered. It's your feature length debut. It world premiered at Slamdance back in 2020. It feels very much a very long time ago, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And then it sort of like premiered in Europe at the Venice Critic Week. And then I showed it at the Munich Film Festival, which was just so much fun. And then before that, you shot a bunch of short films and you were the director, the editor, the videographer, the pretty much everything You did everything on your own with a bunch of people, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's how it goes. Skinner, I'm sure you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yes.
But you know, I got to be honest. I was going to say something, but are we starting? I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut you off.
No,
come on. No, I was going to say, like, the shit that I saw my parents go through, like, to bring films to completion and, like, the types of obstacles they've had to, like, overcome for lack of, like, a technician, like, one person, or, you know what I mean? It just kind of really motivated me to learn as much as I possibly can, you know, like, about every inch of the process of, like, making films. And so, like, when I went to school, my focus was, like, cinematography and sound, you know, and thank God, because I was able to, like, you know, do sound when we couldn't find a sound person for Residue and post, you know, I mixed it, you know, recorded, you know, sound editing and sound design and all these things that, like, I wouldn't have been able to do. Like, I studied producing, and I just try to make sure that, like, no one at part of the process could stop a project that I'm on. And also to type, you know, to try and make myself into the type of person who any one of my friends can just slot me into their project and I could just help them push it to completion, you know, no matter what, you know, when all funds dry up and all that kind of shit, just to, you know, and why, cause there's this weird thing that, like, film schools do, which is just from day one, they're asking you shit like, are you a director? Or are you a writer? You know, are you an editor? Or are you a producer? And really just compartmentalizing all these aspects, which really have no choice but to come together, you know, and work together. And it's just weird when, like, one person doesn't know the other person's job, you know what I mean? And, like, kind of what goes into the whole collaborative process is really stifled by this lack of crosstalk and, like, cross training, you know, between the between the disciplines. And, like, you know, imagine, you know what I mean, how much it would help a cinematographer who knows how to edit, you know what I mean? A lot of times that's the conflict between directors and cinematographers. The cinematographer wants to give you everything out of kind of insecurity to make sure that you have what you need in the editing room. But, like, as an editor, you're like, I know I don't need that. You know, we can move on, or I know we do need that. So I think, like, you know, it's so many ways this comes up.
Absolutely. No, I was just going to say, maybe Skinner, you can start with that, because I mean, we now talked a little tiny bit about, like, how we met you, and also maybe why we picked the two of you as our conversation partners here for this podcast, because it's, of course, due to your beautiful films, but then also because the two of you sort of, like, influenced our way of thinking about sort of, like, you know, getting our own insights into black cinema or contemporary black cinema. So maybe you can tell us a little, because the two of you actually know each other as well. So how did you guys meet? And, like,
well, we both went to USC film school. I dropped out after a year, and Mari and I met through a mutual friend, Sandrine Cassidy, who works at the industry film relations department. And that was someone who I sought out my first semester. I started USC in 2013 and left in 2014. And she became a good friend. We actually lived in the same neighborhood when I lived in LA. My problem with USC, because I do talk shit about that school, is that it's so rooted in the traditional structures of what Hollywood was. And that is not friendly to the Black experience, how Black filmmakers have a lack of resources and have to operate. So for me, I came into the film school as an actor. I studied with the Gene Franco Theater in New York City in the late 90s. I studied with Michael Howard, who used to teach at Juilliard, and I did lots of plays. And so I came in as an actor trying to meet people and learn the aspects of filmmaking, because I was going up for Thug of the Week. Every week I would get an audition for, like, The Practice and Law and Order, and it was just thug, 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 thug. And, you know, USC was very not supportive. And I remember one of my first teachers, Larry Carroll, he passed away, rest in peace. I had, like, a 2-minute cut piece that was all black, and there was just sound design underneath it. And they're like, that's too long of a shot. The shot shouldn't be two minutes long. You need to shorten that shot. And that was in my first semester. And just trying to force me into this very white way of making films. And that's when I realized, like, I just couldn't stay there. One, it was too expensive, you know. And two, I just didn't have the support I felt from my professors. I will say, Mitch Costin, like Marari, I did sound. I did production sound and post sound for I did 547, though, the documentary. And Midge Costin is still a good friend. She really helped me. So I did learn sound because I figured, like, you know, I need to learn other aspects besides just directing. No one's going to pay me to direct. So we met through Sandrine, but we had similar experiences at USC Film School. I happened to drop out just because, you know, I had kids and started working in the industry. I worked on True Detective the second season. And then I left the industry and started teaching and just decided to make films that I wanted to see, you know, out there that no one was really making at that time.
What I like about this idea that both of you are giving of the film industry or of making film, to say it in a much better way, is that filmmaking has something to do with the community, that you have to know what the other one is doing, so you are able to talk and to discuss it. Mm-hmm. That the cinematographer knows how editing works, so both of them can talk about the image and the art that everyone is doing, because filmmaking is not just one person doing it on its own. It's a lot of people working. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is where we all met, or most people met here who are talking, is a film festival is kind of a community in a sense that we are talking about films and that the films bring us together. And that is very different to what most people think of the industry, where everything is so professional and separated. Would you say, because you said that it's a very wide way of making film.
Yeah.
What do you mean with that? Is it something that everything is so professional and in a way industrialized?
Well, what I mean is, so if you look at what a nuclear family structure looks like, right? It's something that was not afforded for Black people, especially during slave times, right? So if you transfer that way of thinking to the filmmaking process, I know, like for Marari and myself, I mean, I made my film for $45,000. I had to, you know, wear a lot of hats because I have a lack of resources. And the type of the style of filmmaking, you know, I sent the script out to some close people and they're like, I don't understand what this script is like. There's no third act. You know, this is just a first act script. And so it's rebelling against how people have been programmed to see what is normal, right? A very okay. Eurocentric way of looking at everything from life to art to commerce, like everything. So that's what I mean by, you know, for us who don't have access to resources, we have to improv. We have to come up with a different aesthetic to say what we want to say, you know, and that's just kind of how it is right now.
I think also if you just look at like the form of like, let's say like traditional three act structure, you know, essentially it's like, you know, this form, you know, that we've inherited over like what, 1,000 years of like, you know, human storytelling history, et cetera, and stuff like that. But like specifically in the United States, it's like a form that we've inherited from like 1,000 years of like kind of Eurocentric, you know, kind of ways of telling stories. And like, it's different. Like you listen mm-hmm. to like Akira Kurosawa talk about like the forms of storytelling that he was influenced by. It's like no theater and like all these other things that like Japanese history and culture, like, you know, mm-hmm. crystallized mm-hmm. over the 100 years that they kind of, you know, were able to stay in one place, you know, in their own society with their own culture. You know, they closed off their borders, whatever you feel about that. It mm-hmm. allowed them the opportunity to like develop their own history and culture, you know, and like hand these things down yep. in a way that like, you know, Kurosawa was able to benefit from and use. Of course, he borrowed from like the West, like all these other things, but he had his own kind of history to like to work with. And I think that like mm-hmm. Black people in the United States are so intent on like destroying. If you look at like Skinner's films, Black folks are like so intent on like really challenging this this form that we've inherited, and just the notion that like it's the only way to tell a story. Listen, man, I went to school. Yeah. This school that we're talking about, despite its best intention, it can't help itself. I went to school. There was my first writing class that I took because I was forced to. No, my second one. The teacher starts the class off by saying, like, this is the only way to tell a story. And like these other forms out there, like those aren't actual stories. Like those are just kind of like meandering, whatever, experimental, you know, whatever way he had of just kind of like discarding, you know, entire, you know, swaths of like human populations, history and culture. And he's like, this is the way. And if you want to sell a film in Hollywood, because that's the only thing that he could conceive of people's desire who would come take his class, mm-hmm. then this is what you got to do. You know what I mean? And people take that shit hook, line, and sinker. And that's the class. After you take that class, man, my classmates have who had interesting ideas in our first semester after that class, unrecognizable from the whole army of like everybody else who's like that's went right. through this school or like has studied, you know, these, you know, whatever, these, you know, this who have taken in this thing without question. You know what I mean? To me, like it's a tool and it has purpose. You know, just like every other tool has some purpose that it can be applied to, but like to take it in without question, to assume that it's the only tool in your tool set, then you, I mean, of course you're going to look like every other film in Hollywood right now, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
Can I ask a rather sort of like provocative question? Do you guys feel kind of frustrated? Because when we talk about UCLA, I mean, there was a movement called the LA Rebellion, where Merabi, your dad, was sort of like a part of in the 1960s, which is a long time ago. And when mm-hmm. we talk about it now, or when I hear you guys talk about it now, it seems like not a lot has changed since then.
Just, it's, you're exactly right. I mean, I, as a professor, I've been teaching for almost 7 years. And out of those 7 years, maybe I've had 5 or 6 black students at the undergrad and grad level. And I taught at Loyola Marymount University, which was like a top 7 film school. And now I'm in Colorado. And nothing has changed, to be honest with you. I think once Spike got big and had that crossover appeal, crossing over into, you know, commercial success, whiteness or whatever, a lot of younger black filmmakers wanted that. And a lot of them don't know the historical black cinematic tradition. And if they do, they don't want, they, you know, it's like, it's cool to talk about it, but they don't want to struggle with telling their original stories. Everyone wants commercial success. And so, I personally, maybe Mara, you feel different. I personally feel like not much has changed in that regard, you know. It's really frustrating. I'm extremely frustrated. I mean, I'm about to make another movie in 15 weeks. And usually, you know, you make a film, maybe get a little bit more extra money to make the second film. And I'm actually doing the reverse. I'm making another feature that's going to be cheaper than the first one. But, you know, it is what it is. So we'll see. But yeah, I don't think much has changed, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Yeah, I mean, the example we started with like, you know, yeah, I was thinking about that all the time. Just like the shit that like my parents went through while they were at school. Cause like, yeah, I was expecting things to be different, but it was like very clear. I had a teacher who in the same way, similar to that first writing professor I told you about, wasn't speaking directly to me, but like that same semester I wrote, you know, like my short film, like a little 6-minute piece. It's like the third film that you do in your first year or whatever. And like, yeah, I was, it was just weird. Cause like there was just like so much unnecessary tension between like me and my professors to the point where like the weekend before I went to go shoot, you know, the day before I went to go shoot, she's like, man, like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't see it. This is not a story. You know what I mean? Like point blank, simple, like this is not a story. And like, basically what she was saying was that like, I don't recognize like those cues that like I'm used to, you know, like those signals of like 3-act structure in the way that I'm used to them. And so like, you know, you're going to do what you want to do, but like, I cannot green like this. If I was a studio, I would not give you the money to do this. And like, but which is whatever, you know, it's fine. But like, if you look at the films that like she was green lighting, You know what I'm saying? If you look at like the other films who achieved that, those structural signals, you know what I mean? Of like three act or whatever, traditional kind of shit. But the types of films that they, you know, man, it really is kind of like, not much has changed, you know? And I think that like, I think that it's only because I had a group of friends with me who were just like, you know, on the same page and were just like, cause I was starting to like give into the pressure. It's no joke. You know what I mean? Like, it's not only your teachers, it's people you're going to school with. It's the other films that you watch in and shit like that. It's a lot of pressure. And a lot of it is not overt. A lot of it is shit that you can't even see or tell. It is attractive. You know what I'm saying? You're like, I do want to be able to kind of do this thing with my film. And so like little by little, you start taking it in and it starts to change like those, you know, those amateur instincts that we talk about that like everybody kind of has, you know, like your own personal aesthetic, or your own voice, if you will, you know, which is like so important to nurture in the early stages of like being a film student. But like, you know, when you when you just kind of like, your voice is totally overpowered by like Alfred Hitchcock technique, boom, you know what I'm saying? All of a sudden you don't even know what you thought was good anymore. If it doesn't look like Hitchcock, then it's not good to you, you know?
That's right.
So, and that's not to say these things are useless. It's just to put them in context, to say that they're just one way of being, like one tool set, you know, one tool for you to have. And just, you know, like Africans, man, like, especially in the United States, like, you know, at what point have we had the opportunity to really, you know, go over the length of our history and say, like, this is the storytelling forms that are indigenous to us. And like, you know, like the question itself is just, it's so massive because of this, you know, catastrophic shit that like white people imposed on us. Now it's just like, of course, everybody is contesting the form because it is Eurocentric. You know, it has taken on such Eurocentric characteristics. You know, it's hard to separate from those into, you know, and we also want to say, like, what is our own organic way of, like, you know, doing? So this whole question of, like, black cinema is super just kind of, like, you know, super, you know, up in the air.
Yeah. I mean, I have, you know, there's classmates from USC when I was there who are working in the studio system. And I think, you know, you can't do any radical black cinema through the studio system. It's an oxymoron. And I, you know, it's like, people are like, oh, I want to reach a big audience. But I, you know, it's, everything's going to be watered down. It's going to be through the white gaze, you know? So all these black films that have come out in the past, slave films, whatever, who is it for? That's the question I always have. Who is this for? Because it doesn't feel like it's really for the black community. If a lot of white people are championing the film and they're really comfortable with what's going on and black people are kind of like on the fence about it, and you're getting all these accolades, it's like, who is it really for? So I just think that when I say we, like black artists in general, there's a lack of desire to make things for the community. It's more about maybe a cosplay, but then wanting success and money. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't want to be broke, but also at 42 years old, you know, I want to leave behind something that I feel like has integrity, you know what I'm saying, with the work that I make. And it's not going to look like maybe what's been out there before because I'm experimenting and exploring. But like Marwi's dad, Haile, has talked about triangular cinema. Not only do we have to talk about this aspect of black cinema from an artist perspective, but if you look at the film criticism and how that has, you know, how film critics have been programmed to only view films in a very Eurocentric way, that's an issue as well. And then the audience has to be reprogrammed to understand that it's okay to accept and watch cinema that doesn't fit into this Eurocentric way. That's a lot of work. And I feel like no one's really focusing on that anymore. And that's another aspect that has not changed in my opinion. You know, you have these young critics who, like, I saw something on Twitter where this one critic was like, yeah, once I started watching old movies, my whole film criticism, like, changed. It's like they were criticizing films without even really understanding film history. It's silly. But they'll write up for these articles and these magazines, and it's their word, you know? And so, I don't know. It's a big problem.
I think that is a very important issue, film criticism and writing about movies, because I think that when we talk about cinema, most people just talk about the films, but cinema is so much more. It's the talking, the writing, the discussing, the whole canon of, or the history, the film history, that is cinema. I also got the impression, because I work as a film critic in Germany, mm-hmm. that it's interesting that it's the same way as you describe your co-directors who are just in there in a way of a cosplay or want to be successful, that most of the critics are writing about, or especially the YouTubers and reviewers, because I think that a review is something mm-hmm. different than being a film. A reviewer is something different than being a film critic.
Mm-hmm.
Are very much focused on being successful on their own, because there is this thing that I would say complicates it all, that is capitalism, that is the market. But let's put it in another way. I have one question that is running through my mind. You said that Eurocentrism is this three-way or this three-act structure. Would you say, both of you say, that Eurocentrism or this capitalistic way of making a film has materialized into a specific form?
One, I want to clarify. I think that three-act structure is a form, you know, and I think that in its use over history, you know, in the conventions that have kind of developed over time, it has taken on Eurocentric characteristics. You know what I mean? I think that and I think that it has been used in that way, and I think that we're encouraged to use it in ways that kind of I think that we use it in ways that kind of prohibit us from kind of discovering or trying to discover what might else serve us in a search for something, you know, that is, you know, more reflective of, like, you know, African values and African kinds of, like, ways of telling stories. And I say that because, like, my dad, his dad was a playwright in Ethiopia, right? And, like, never studied Shakespeare, never studied anything like that. But, like, there's, like, a whole history of, like, you know, Ethiopians before him, and like this, you know, styles of like storytelling. His grandmother, my father's grandmother, for example, was like a apparently incredible storyteller who never wrote a word down, you know, this oral history that was like passed down. And like, these are things I have almost no access to. I have access to like my grandfather's like plays if I learn I'm Herrick, but like generally speaking, you know, you can imagine a whole universe of like ways of telling stories outside of I find it hard to believe that like my grandfather's like, you know, plays had any kind of like, you know, three act structural considerations or whatever, you know what I mean? And at the same time that in no way devalues, you know, his way of like, you know, telling a story. And so like, I think that like, if I fix my entire, you know, if my entire conception of like what a story can be is like this three act, you know, way, which I'm taught here in the United States, then like, at what point does it make sense to me to like even want to go to like discover like these other ways of like telling stories? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think that like, that's the danger, you know? The other thing I want to say is that the second part of your question, you were saying, has capitalism created, can you say it again for me? I wanted to answer that one too.
No, I'm interested in how close you would connect that to capitalism and the market, because Skinner referred to those people working in the business and other black directors working in the business doing kind of a way of a cosplay and want to be successful. And the three-way or the three-act structure is, I mean, that is kind of an imperialism, an aesthetical imperialism that is also in a way coming from Europe to the States and from the States back to Europe, because we also have a lot of other filmmakers. I mean, for example, like Bellatar, who is never used. I think he gives a shit about all that, yeah. And he's just trying to express. So basically, could we say that it's all boiling down to the market? That is the audience is used to, and we're going to sell them what we conditioned them to watch.
And can I maybe add something? Because that's also just one of the big questions that sort of like I stumble upon all the time. Isn't it like always a question about like selling out as well as an artist in a way, like you're doing something that people are used to because you know it's going to sell?
I just want to say something real quick, and then Mara, you can answer that. It's funny, selling out. My students, you know, I have undergrad, they don't understand what that means. That doesn't exist in the world. It does for me. I mean, I'm born in 1980. But that, for them, that's just the normal way of being successful. So it's interesting because they don't even know what that word means. They're like, selling out, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm already on social media. Like, the goal is to be seen. So that's something that we have to be aware of. Like, the term selling out is for like, does not exist with the up and coming filmmakers. And from my experience as a professor, seeing these kids graduate, they just don't know what that means. They're like, what is that? That's normal. That's just what we do.
That is super interesting to hear, Skinner, because it's like one of the biggest questions that I am sort of like thinking about too when I pick films as well. Because we are always like, I feel like as a festival, or Sebastian as well as a film critic, you're trying to sort of like make aware that there is something else out there than, you know, like super mainstream cinema. So, and it's like, you know, it's like one sort of like world we live in, and we are all sort of like attached to each other and pulling apart and pulling together, you know. It's like all, everything is connected in a way.
Yeah, I mean, also just Sebastian, you know, I think that, like, you're absolutely right. You know, so like cinema, just like every other art form, you know, to kind of, you know, sustain you, you do have to enter into the market, and like it's a commodified, you know, art form, you know, if you're using it to sustain you. And I think that like filmmakers who are interested in, you know, untethering from like the, you know, kind of forces of the market to a degree, as best you can, as regards your work, you know, I think you do have to keep your day job. You know, like to me, like Skinner, like teaching, you know, but also making his films on the side. Like that's really the only option that like filmmakers have. You know, my dad taught at Howard University. He taught film for 40 years. And like that was how he kind of like kept the lights on and continued to make films that would not make money. But I think that like, you know, that's true. Like the market really only recognizes, or is only really content and, you know, confident in investing in films that, you know, kind of reflect this three act structure, because that's their, you know, that's what they recognize as like you said, what the audiences have been conditioned to respond to over time, you know, through them and other forces in history, whatever. Like that's the way to go, as we, you know, in regards to their money. And I think that like, yeah, like to me, like what I'm interested in is like this kind of like increasingly politicized population in the United States, especially since like 2020, and like seeing all this shit that's going on, mm-hmm. like the types of shit that like really aren't, people aren't passing over anymore. You know, the things that like people are now willing to say and like speak on, to me signals like an increasing level of like politicization in the population, and hopefully some which will trickle down into like, you know, kind of like the spheres of like artists and like, you know, filmmakers as well, who I think will also thereby increasingly, you know, bring on a lot of that kind of like political rigor into their art, into their craft, you know, and I think it's totally necessary, you know, to have like a class of like Black artists period, but specifically like Black artists who are, you know, extremely political and also riding that line as artists, you know, and finding ways not to be pamphleteers, but ways to be high level artists who have, you know, intent, like have an actual political intent, you know, and direction, you know, and bias, you know what I mean? There's really no time anymore for like, you know, like unbiased takes in black cinema, you know what I mean? And they never have been, you know, black people, it's the hardest thing for black people to be is unbiased, you know, especially in like political spheres and shit. But I think that like, what I'd like to see amongst like black filmmakers is like more rigor politically and artistically, you know what I mean? And more daring. And like the only way you can become, you know, the only way to create space for yourself to be more daring in your art is to dislodge your livelihood from your art, you know, as best you can.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think for black people just in America, we don't have time to not fight for our own liberation and rechanging the social order. So, you know, it's like if you're only focused on making these very highly successful studio films, what is that doing for the community? I think we have a very rugged individualism in America. So it's about, well, if I can escape the hood or whatever, can I get on? Can I make money? Can I get the bag? Then I'm good. And I just think as a black person, but also as a human being, that's not how one should live, right? And would I like to not have student loans? Yeah, but I'm not going to do Creed 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 or whatever to get out of that. And there's things that I want to say in a way that I have not seen. When you learn a language, I speak Japanese. My wife is from Japan. We've been married 18 years. You have to learn the culture in order to really learn the language of India, you know. And mm-hmm. black people have always, you know, in America, you know, to be a black American is to be a product of rape, right? And so we've always fought to try to find our own culture within this very American patriotism. I mean, if you think about it, if you really break it down, to be patriotic is like hate speech, because that is rooted on the subjugation of black people and the genocide of Native Americans. So, you know, it's when you're trying to learn your own culture or your own history and you want to make films that reflect that, there's no room right now financially, market-wise, PR-wise, distribution-wise for that if it doesn't fit this Eurocentric 3X structure. And so that's a hard thing to fight against. But I think as black people, we don't have time to play any more games. And I think, you know, if enough of us got together and really push and push and push and create our own distribution network, we would have our own audience. Because I can tell you, like, not everyone loves the films I make. Some people think they're quite amateurish. But the people who do get it really get it. And it's like, okay, if we could just build that out, people do want to see something different. They're just not given the option. If you tell me you want a salad, and I say, well, I'm sorry, you can only choose between a pizza or a hamburger, you have choice, but it's not the freedom of choice. It's not the choice you want, but I've given you a choice. And I think there's a lot of people out there who want to see these different black stories, but they're not giving the avenue to see them. And we saw that with the LA Rebellion. I mean, it was an amazing movement, and then it just kind of like faded out in the 80s. And, you know, Marawi's parents shouldn't have to fundraise for any film, right? There should be people in this industry who are knocking down the door to give them money. Charles Burnett shouldn't have to struggle to get a project done at 75 years old, right? But you have people who are 22, will come out of film school, just say yes to something, and all of a sudden, you know, millions of dollars are doing these really weird movies. So our priorities are not where they should be as a black community. And we see that in politics. We see that in how we operate amongst ourselves. And I think we need a better political education, and that's where it starts. As an artist, you got to have a strong political education, you know, and people change. I mean, shoot, I was a freaking conservative in my teenage years. I didn't know. I grew up in a very bootstrappy, very Christian, you know, my dad was a preacher, and, you know, it's like, there's a lot I had to unlearn as I became an adult. A lot of confusion that I had to become confused about. But you have to clarify the fight as black people, and we should use every avenue of our lives, art, commerce, work, to clarify that fight for us and for those that come after us. And, you know, that's my personal goal with art. It's like, you know.
But can I just ask one quick question? Because I think it's just super interesting that you're talking about distribution, and like a few things have already changed, right? Because I mean, you have Ava DuVernay and you have Array Now, which is sort of like a black driven platform. Like, what do you think about that? Because not a lot of people in Germany know that there is something like Array Now, because we don't have that here in Germany or in Europe at all.
Yeah, is that for me?
Well, or both. I mean, Residue is or was on Array Now and then on Netflix. So maybe, Meravi, you could say something about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, I talk about this all the time. Like, it blew my parents' minds that, like, after I spent all those years making a film, I didn't have to, like, turn around and spend equally as much, as many years, you know, distributing it, you know, by hand. In fact, one day I was like, yo, Haile, like, I'm thinking about, like, maybe just trying to, like, self-distribute this thing just to kind of see, just to learn from it, just to kind of gain that experience. He was like, are you stupid? Yo, straight like that. Motherfucker, are you stupid?
So what did you do? What did you do? What did you do, Bobby? Did you self-distribute?
Hell no. I gave that up.
That's so funny.
I put that movie on a hard drive on you know, Google. I gave that to Array and let them do, you know, do that part. And, like, they did an excellent job and, like, saved me a lot of time. I would literally still be pushing that film right now. Like, you know, there's many things I still want to do, but, like, in terms of just, like, releasing in the States, like, it would be somewhere, you know, maybe on YouTube or something, and I'll be, you know, passing out links, which is totally fine. Like, something that, like, I'll do if I have to do. But, like, at the same time, because I'm not doing that, unlike them, I have the freedom to, like, be here writing, you know, my next project, or, like, be here, like, you know, prepping the next thing.
Yeah. I will say, there should be, in my opinion, there should be 100
exact
Array type.
Can I
right?
Yes. Like, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Jump in.
No, I was gonna say that, like, but it's also very important to, like, add that it was just Array. Nobody else was. No, they were not knocking down our doors. You know what I mean? It was only Array who was like, "We'll distribute this film." There were people who reached out when they see the buzz, oh, Slam Dance, you know, Venice, they get interested, especially, like, you know, French distributors, they get real curious and, like, you know, whatever, and, like, oh, can we watch the film? Da-da-da-da. Yeah, we heard great things. Then you send them the link and they're like,
That's right.
Maybe not. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's really in the States, it was only Array, and in France, it was only Capricci. And to me, like, that's it. You know, like, I think that, like, it's at a very early stage, and, like, you know, Array, they only release, what, like, 5-6 films a year, you know what I mean? Out of how many black films being made, they can't do it all, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Skinner.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, it's true. I think, you know, like, we world premiere at Slam Dance 2021, and we had a couple companies reach out. And the only one that just kept bugging us, like, every week they would send us an email, was Art Matin Films, which is based in New York City. They've been around since 93, but it's a husband and wife duo. Diara's from, I think she's from Paris, and her husband's from Cuba. He's Afro-Cuban, Dr. Renato Specht. And they've worked hard with our distribution in the States, and I'm very thankful. Like, we opened up New York, LA, and Atlanta, and now we're going to, like, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Boulder, and all these other cities. But they struggle, because when they reached out to all their theatrical partners, that usually, because they're a Pan-African distribution company that usually programs their movies without a question, because of the title, The Sleeping Negro, we got turned down everywhere. So at first, it looked like we're only going to play in LA and New York. And now, because, like, we won the Fipresi in Germany, and we got the Visionary Award at Cinequest, and we got some good reviews. Now, like, other cities, theaters coming back around, it's like, oh, we'll program it for a week run here and there. So, like, I don't know. It's just there should be 1,000 of those types of distributors, right, for these types of films. But there's not, because even on that level, you got to fight against an uphill battle, you know? And let's not talk about minimum guarantees and all these things, because like my movie is hella cheap in terms of how much I shot it on film. I shot for 8 days, you know, like maybe I'll break even in 5 years on $45,000. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe. And I can say the same thing for the next movie I'm about to make. So that all has to change as well, right? Because at every level, it's a struggle from not only writing, producing, getting the funding, distribution, and then it's festivals, right? A lot of festivals in America, an extension of Hollywood, Sundance, all those.
They ain't cheap, you know, either.
Crazy festivals. They ain't cheap. No, they're making so much money. So I don't know. All that has to be redone in a way, but I don't know. We'll see. It's still frustrating to me.
There is one question that Julia and I discussed a lot. We really wanted to ask you is what black cinema is to you. But after a discussion, the question turned into what can black cinema be? And after all that we talked until now, I think that makes totally sense, because for me, as much as I follow you, it is not a label. It is something that is open. It's something that is a perspective. And that brings an interesting perspective to the discussion we are having. And maybe we can specify a little bit what black cinema could be by discussing the situation right now. Because, I mean, I'm playing the devil's advocate a little bit, you know. A lot of people, you could imagine, would say, well, look, there are a lot of black directors out there doing the films. So many doing very big movies. I mean, there is Black Panther, there is Barry Jenkins, Ryan Coogler, who did Black Panther. There is there are a lot of people like Steve McQueen who are doing that big movies and getting a lot of reputation from it. And there are a lot of white directors who are doing films focusing on black stories. Like, I mean, even a film that is not shown here in Europe, Joe Talbot's Last Black Man in San Francisco, or Sam Levinson, Malcolm and Marie, that was broadly broadcasted everywhere because it's on Netflix. So, from your perspective, is that black cinema, or is there more to come, or what work do we have? Do we, as a community of human beings, have to put in that there is something like an expression of a black perspective in cinema?
Well, I'll from my standpoint, if black cinema is not if black cinema is not challenging like social positions established by white supremacy and the dominant systems in power, then, you know, what is it doing? I think the potential for black cinema to have its own cinematic language is great. Some of those filmmakers you named, you know, like I love Lovers Rock that Steve did. I thought that really had it just really was an amazing expression of just like black people, especially during that time. But some of those other filmmakers, I just feel like, you know, after you get a lot of success, you get confused. And I think they're confused. And I think we have to redefine what black cinema can be from a terminology standpoint. Because black cinema to me is not just a movie that has black people in it made by a black person. You know, if it's following traditional storytelling models, then to me personally, like, I can't say that's black cinema. When white dude, like Last Black Man in San Fran, I'm not going to like, you know, talk too much shit, but that wasn't, to me, that wasn't for us, by us. And same with Malcolm Marie, that was basically a white dude who had some personal issues with people who were critiquing his work, and he put blackface on it because that's how cheap he thought of black people, in my personal opinion. So I found it quite disgusting. I thought you know, I don't know Barry's personally, and this is not like a personal dig, but what he did with Underground Railroad was very disturbing to me. How slavery and the pain of the violence of slavery was beautified. Again, who is it for? Who is this helping? Who is this for? So we have to look at from a community level, how does it help change the social power structures, right? From an art standpoint. And who is the movie for? Is it codifying a language that will allow white people to understand because then they're making it for a white audience? Or is it trying to bring black community together or at least share their experience from, you know, like what we go through every day? So, man, I think the definition of black cinema has to be redefined on our terms, but I think it has to work towards some type of liberatory aspect. If not, we're just playing games, you know what I'm saying?
To me, like, I think, you know, like black cinema is like such a general kind of thing. I think that like, you know, sorry, this damn cat. There's, to me, the way I look at film is like two things. Like if you're caught up in like film and like that's how you have to make money, like I see like, you know, kind of market cinema, kind of Sebastian, as you kind of like pointed to, like films of just, you know, just kind of out there making money, whatever. A lot of times they'll dress it up with like, oh, you know, this will address sexism or this will address racism and shit like mm-hmm. that. But like ultimately, you know, market film is a market film. And like, so yeah, you know, if somebody wants to call that, you know, black cinema, you know, if a black person made it, fine. But like, to me, like, I guess what I'm interested in is like this, this other cinema that we've been talking about, which is just like, yeah, I think that like what people do at night, you know, what people do on the weekends, you know what I mean? What these artists are doing kind of like after their day job is over. Because usually mm-hmm. that's where you'll find the artists who are kind of like, intending their art to be used for some type of liberatory shit. Like Skinner said to me, like, you know, the best quote is Tony K. Bambara, you know, the role of the artist is to make revolution irresistible. And I think that like black people, especially in the United States, like have no choice but to like, you know, move in that direction. Like everything that black people hate about existence in the United States is like literally, you know, just a downstream effect of like the way that the whole society is organized. You know what I mean? It's organized on the premise of like exploitation of like black, brown, and, you know, other working class people. And I think that like ultimately, you know, the way to like get through that is through, you know, this kind of shit. To me, like there's no I think that like Skinner said it, you know, earlier when he was just saying, you know, kind of like our job is to clarify things. You know, there's so many people, like so many ideas out there. There's so many entities out there trying to help people to draw conclusions with what's happening in the world today and like all the shit that's going on, and to like help people make sense of this shit. And a lot of it is basically to fold them back into the fucking factory, you know what I mean? Without really kind of getting at the heart of it. And so like the purpose for like any revolutionary filmmaker is to help people draw conclusions in the right direction. To me, like that's the work. And yeah, I don't see it any other way. I think that I separate that from like, you know, and it's totally possible to make cinema that does not intend that, you know, that, you know, it's just for enjoyment and shit like that, which is fine, you know? But like, to me, like what I'm interested in is like, you know, like a lot more black folks jumping into the fray, you know, like basically like fucking, you know, critical mass of just like all these black people on social media doing incredible things with their cell phones, you know what I mean, have just every bit of like right to like jump into the fray is like, you know, creating this critical mass of black artists who can challenge the power of Hollywood and everybody mm-hmm. else, you know what I mean? Because it's not going to be up to like one billionaire who's just like happens to be a revolutionary. It's not going to fucking happen. You know, I think that like it's going to be like a total movement, you know, a cultural mm-hmm. and like artistic movement.
Absolutely. But then do you feel like that sort of like, let's call it the establishment, still needs to be a part of it? Because when we go back to like the film schools that you both attended, at least for a while, it's like, do we then still need them to shift or change the narrative and sort of like reorganize the narratives and the structures? Or do you really sort of like need to build your own structures to have the film history that you want to tell Black young filmmakers? It's like, how is it going to work in the future? Or what would be your ideal in a way?
No, I mean, why wouldn't we? Sorry. Why wouldn't?
No, go ahead, Mara. Go.
Yeah. Why wouldn't we kind of build on what we have? You know, I think that like for me, all the knowledge I got out of USC, I can easily share that with people. I try my best to like, you know, share it to people. And like, I think that there's so many ways to like pass this knowledge on, you know, a million Black people don't have to go and take on the same amount of debt that I took on to like learn these skills and techniques. I think that like ultimately, you know, the goal is not to like, you know, erase everything. It's to take what's good, you know, here, and take what's useful, you know, and use it to serve our interests, you know. And I think that like if it is useful to you to like have a job in Hollywood and like be able to pay the bills like that, fine. Just don't convince yourself that like that's the way you're gonna help, you know, like that's
right.
Just don't convince yourself that like that is the revolutionary practice that's gonna like help Black folks, you know what I mean? That's the practice going to help you finance the revolutionary practice on the side, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, for me, if we had spooks who sat by the door, so to speak, that would be awesome, where some of these very wealthy Black people would funnel money to more revolutionary practices and ideas. I think that's not happening, but that could happen. But again, once you're on that level, you know, they're called Negro liberals. It's like they don't want to lose that money and that access to whiteness, right? So are they really going to do that? And probably not. But two, I think like we can, like I used to work from this, before the pandemic in LMU, we would try to take a few of professors, Black professors at LMU would go into high schools and like inner city schools and basically just give our knowledge away for free, right? Because it should be. I mean, I'm $360,000 in student loan debt, and I don't want, you know, these kids to do that either, but I'll gladly share my experiences and my abilities with them. So maybe they'll be the brain that sparks a revolutionary change. I feel like if people just need to be honest, right? If you want to be a Hollywood filmmaker and you're Black and you just want to get the bag and be on, like, just admit that. Don't pretend like that's the only way you're going to really be doing some revolutionary shit on the side, because we know that's not the case. And I think there's a lot of people out there who want to be seen down for the cause, but really don't want the status quo to change. And for me, I'm just like, just be honest. Like, there's nothing wrong with escapism films. I mean, I was watching Willy Wonka with my son last night. Like, I like that movie. But, you know, it's like the stuff that I want to make has a different purpose, you know? If Hollywood wants to give me money and then literally not give me, like, get out of my way and let me do what I got to do, awesome. But we know that doesn't happen, you know? So it's taking our skills, taking it to the community, and then if they find that resourceful or useful, like Marari was saying, then awesome. But there's other ways to help our community besides filmmaking. And that's something I struggle with a lot. Like, I don't have to make movies. I can get a lot more tangible results much faster by doing something way different. You know, so that's something that's always in the back of my head. Like, is this the right way to use my time at this point in my life, my resources, my energy? So I live in Colorado. It's like 99% white. I got nothing but frat kids and sorority students, you know. It's like there's not a lot of Black people to really get in touch with out here. So that's another thing I have to think about.
No, it's something I think about a lot too. And I think everybody, especially nowadays, is really, a lot of filmmakers, I think, probably are up against the same thing. Because like film is like such a long game. It's like, yeah, I want to help with film and I want to make a film. And then like it's hard to measure. It's very amorphous, immaterial, you know, results from like your work, like residue, like how do I measure its impact and like, you know, whatever. But then you look at like my sister, she's a teacher, you know what I'm saying? And like, you can see immediately, you know, the impact that she's having on like her students' lives and stuff like that. And she's very frontline. I struggled with this for a long time, but I, you know, the way I've been able to, you know, kind of like bridge that gap, so to speak, or supplement, you know, the art form is by just organizing. So I'm in Chicago and I've been kind of organizing, you know, since let's say like 2020, you know what I mean? And like that has been, you know, that's the first time I feel that like I'm not just like a artist secluded in my watchtower, you know what I'm saying? While like the world is actually going through, you know, the motions and all these things are happening. And like, but also like, it's also incredibly important to the craft as the artist, because it also keeps me grounded, you know, in like, you know, basically amongst the people who I care about most anyway, you know, amongst the people who my art, you know, is directed at, you know? And I think that like, a lot of times filmmakers do are at risk of becoming out of touch, you know? And just like they say, like, you know, your reality determines your consciousness, you know what I mean? Like the your day-to-day existence determines your consciousness. And I think that like, there's so many ways that like Hollywood is really good at like plucking talented artists out of the community, putting them in a whole different context outside of the, you know, original context, which gave them any kind of radical inclinations. Now they're in this other, you know, new context. And yeah, it's no surprise or wonder kind of how that transformation happens, you know? Right. So for me, it's been an incredibly important kind of addition to my practice as a filmmaker, you know, kind of like the merging of these two worlds. And again, you know, like the challenge is to not be a pamphleteer. You know, we still have kind of obligations to like, you know, well-made art, you know, and high level craft, you know, and storytelling. But I think that like that's really the only, you know, to me presents itself as the only solution, because, you know, the solution to through our problems will be through organizing people anyway. So, you know, I think that like a collective approach, you know, I think that like, you know, what is more direct than that than like organizing? So that's kind of what I've arrived at, you know, kind of like the duty of all people. You know?
What I really like about a conversation is something I thought of after watching Residue, the term community, and that something that is frustrating me in Germany as well. And I think you know what I mean is, the construction of stardom, of stars, of those people working in the industry getting very successful. And when they get successful, they get very important. And when they get very important, they get separated from the community. And they're getting themselves kind of a commodity. And when I listen to you talking about film, it's not so much, it's like you're talking about an art form, you talk about expression, you're talking about binding people together. And I think that our conversation digs really deep into how the whole industry, as Americans say, the whole film industry is constructed, is structured. It is so much structured on the idea of separation, of being something very special because you're doing this film and everybody loves you. But taking that away and working together on the same level, that you are a filmmaker and the other one is working in a bakery or whatever, is this kind of working on something like one of my most favorite philosophers, Jacques Rancière, he's a French philosopher, says the sensory fabric or the distribution of the sensible, that we are living in this world together where we have certain sensations that are common. And that is what black cinema has to work on, isn't it? Like to express something that people can inscribe themselves into. But the problem with the mainstream Hollywood film industry is not just that they are making money or that is a three-act structure, but that they are separating everyone from everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I think if black cinema is made in Hollywood terms, it just further concretizes the blackness as the other in that world. There's no room for other experiences in that model. I don't know if that could change. I don't know. But right now, there's not. So I think there's a lot of black people who want to see a different cinema. That, like I said earlier, they're just not given the opportunity to. Also, too, like black males have just been, the way we are portrayed is just been a travesty. You know, if there's not some intersectionality aspect to a character, you can't just have a black male exist, because we the entire structure here in America, the entire structure of how society is structured and operates depends upon us as black males fulfilling a certain role, which that role is like rapist, brute, beast. We don't have, we're not humanized in a lot of ways. So that's another aspect of at least the stories I want to tell, is like humanizing the black male perspective and, you know, the depression, the grief, the struggles that we all go through. And so, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm even answering that question, but I just think like trying to, it's almost like you're trying to reform something that's unreformable, right? The whole thing needs just to be completely bypassed in terms of what I think needs to happen for black cinema. And we need to just do our own thing and hopefully build a community that's down to support what we're doing. And that grows and grows and grows. Obviously, you got to fight with co-opting of that. You know, I mean, after George Floyd was murdered, we had like how many corporations with all these like Black Lives Matter things and
Amazon.
And we got to go beyond slogans, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. There needs to be like a materialistic change. Violence is part of that, too, in my opinion. But yeah. Well, nothing's going to change by asking permission. You got to take it. Right? You got to force change. Sometimes that's a physical act that may include violence. Like sloganeering and asking permission for things to be changed never works. And whenever things in the past have changed, it's been on the deaths of people who've been fighting for a certain cause.
Yeah, I think that's why 2020 was so kind of like massive. Like, they burned a fucking police station down. You know what I mean? I think that like people saw confrontations and conflict and like, you know, explosions of violence with the police that nobody ever imagined before. Just videos.
Seen. They got left scared.
And right. Videos of just like people, you know, just like swing, you know, fighting back, knocking police out and running and shit, and never getting caught and just being like, suddenly people like, oh shit, you can do that. You know what I mean? It was just like a whole shift in like the way people were conceiving of like, what their options are, you know, in the States. And so, but I think, you know, also Sebastian, kind of going back to your question, I think the problem with Hollywood, you know, kind of like it does what it is, you know, intended to do, which is just kind of like as an institution cropped up out of like, you know, this capitalist system, like the goal is to like help to perpetuate, you know, capitalist ideology. And like, you know, of course, you know, further individualizes us, you know what I mean? The whole shebang, you know what I mean? And, you know, puts all these whatever, you know, in ways that doesn't really kind of serve any type of like liberation, you know, ideas, you know, whatever you want to call them. And like, so I think that like, I do want to draw a distinction between like black cinema and then kind of like, let's say like revolutionary black cinema. And I think that like, then if you're looking at like that, then like the problem with Hollywood is, yeah, that like it is meant to perpetuate an ideology, which, you know, is born out of our enslavement and really only seeks to continue our kind of like, you know, unresistant, you know, acquiescence to like the system as is, right? And and I think that and kind of reduce the height of our political power to like voting, you know what I mean? Like, don't get mad, vote, you know, all that kind of shit. And like, you know, and then like make racism just seem like the, you know, the moral failings of individuals rather than like, you know, the fucking system. So I think that like, I think that, you know, therefore, you know, the alternative becomes clear, you know, in terms of like,
But then maybe to extend the question even a little further, when we look at Hollywood and the film industry, isn't, I mean, that system isn't working any longer. Of course, we sort of have like Netflix now and Amazon Prime and all of those new platforms that are sort of like the new cinemas, and cinema isn't working anymore. But other than that, like all of that sort of like stardom, celebrity based stuff that has been out there isn't necessarily working any longer. So don't you feel like timing wise, it's a pretty good time to do something revolutionary and something new to just jump in? Because I mean, you know,
you would think that. Our friend Ntume says, he said this. He was like, we have Black Hollywood. We don't have Black cinema. And that is very true. And I think I have a buddy. I won't say his name. But he made his first feature. It hasn't come out yet. It's coming out next year. But it has some big Black ass stars in it. Netflix funded it for a lot of money. And I just know what he had to go through to make that movie. So you have these opportunities, streaming platforms, but they don't want, they want a certain type of Black film. So yes, there is opportunity for certain Black filmmakers who want to make a certain type of Black film to capitalize on that. But for what we're talking about, there's no room right now. There's no avenue besides Array, besides Art Matin. That's it. So I don't know, because, you know, if you want to make a certain movie, yeah, they'll fund it. But they'll tell you how to make it because it's their money, you know. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a good time for revolutionary Black cinema.
No, I mean, I totally agree with you, Skinner, but I mean, there's gotta be an alternative to Netflix and,
oh, I see. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And yeah. I mean, like, isn't there room for more?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Cause
yeah,
I mean, right. we're not gonna change Netflix, at least not for now, but yeah, I mean, isn't there room for something else that just doesn't really exist? Just
I see. Yeah.
That's where I wanted to go. That's where I wanted to go to add another aspect. I'm thinking for quite a few minutes now. When you say that Black cinema, both of you say that Black cinema is kind of a perspective and another way of expressing a look at the world or a community, wouldn't it be the best time to connect yourself with all the other filmmakers who are trying to express and are not seen, because there are so many others? When we analyzed it, it's a market, and Netflix is a market. It's basically the same. Everyone who was screaming about, well, it's a new liberation and everyone is free now and we are free of the big production companies. I mean, there was a, that's ludicrous, yeah. And but in the end of the year, you're doing your best list, like the best films of the year as a critic, and I've seen two films that were so beautiful. One is called Adam. It's a film from Morocco. Nobody has seen it in Germany. I think it ran three nights, maybe in one little cinema. And the other one is a film from Afghanistan, a female directed film. The German title is Kabul Kinderheim. Kabul Kinderheim. Do you know the English translation, Julia? Well, it's a very small film about a boy in Afghanistan in the 80s who is going to a foster home. And it's so interesting because she was one of the last persons who got a plane out of the country when the Taliban conquered.
I heard about this.
It's called The Orphanage, actually.
Yes, very yes, simple. Yes. I've heard of this.
The Orphanage.
And the filmmaker.
And even that it's a perspective that's so important because Afghanistan is a very, very complicated country. And it's so... And most of Europeans think they know what's going on there because we know there are Taliban and there are...
I mean...
Yeah, there is whatever, you know? And isn't it... What all I want to say is the aesthetics of people like Bellatar, one of the older ones, or a person like Regadas,
Lav Diaz.
Slow cinema. Isn't that a perspective, Lav Diaz, to join forces and to make a new community out of it, than just to look at it, everyone is looking at its own local market.
I mean, Murari, we're trying. Would you agree? I mean, it's only four. We have a small group that we're trying to do this anthology film. We're trying to create this new way of looking at Black cinema, using some of the aesthetics of slow cinema. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think there's a lack of imagination and what this could be for a lot of people. So we're trying to connect with other artists, you know? But it's like you get all these artists together and we're all struggling. It's not like we can just force our work on, you know, the community. I don't know. But yes, I think there is room for people to get together, but it's I don't know. It's tough, right? The pandemic has kind of hurt that a little bit. Go ahead, Maron.
No. I was going to say, I think that we have four people. We're working on like a little anthology project together, and like it's a you know, a collective building exercise. And I think that as regards Black people in the United States, like that's kind of like one of the pockets, you know. But I agree, Sebastian, just in terms of like, you know, the opportunity for like a wider, you know, organizing you know, movement amongst filmmakers kind of on this side of the line, you know, Black or otherwise. And I think that like, just tying that into Julia, what you were saying in terms of like Netflix, you know, one, I think, you know, the fact of, you know, the existence of like this platform that like the whole world can access is incredible, you know. And I think the problem obviously is that like it's owned by like a handful of like white folks, you know what I'm saying, or whatever, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like very few people who have total control over this massive thing. Just like Facebook could be cool, you know, fucking, you know, all these other platforms, they could be cool, but like it's just, you know, however many, you know, small handful of people like own these things and determine their their use. You know, it could be an absolutely amazing way to like, you know, show, you know, to like, you know, all the films that you're talking about, like to like help people to like make sense of like the world around them. You know, like you said, Afghanistan is incredibly complex, and the only perspective that we get on Afghanistan is like this kind of like unified corporate, you know, media's, you know, of course, highly biased kind of like take on it, because, you know, when it comes to like U.S. foreign policy, like, you know, one minute they even during Trump, one minute they like hate Trump, but when it comes to foreign policy, they are just in perfect line, in perfect unison, you know, parroting the same shit. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, you know, having the storytellers from these places be able to speak for themselves, like Netflix could serve that purpose, you know, like Netflix could really be so useful. But I think that like, I agree. I think that like, it's absolutely essential. And like the time, you know, it's critical and a good time, you know, and we do have tools to like help us kind of organize in this way. I think it's important to kind of like push outside of kind of like our instinctual kind of like alliances, you know, like Black people tend to ally with like Black people. But I think that like, for example, like Afghanistan to me had everything to do with, you know, Black people in the United States, and like Palestine obviously has everything to do with Black people in the United States. And I think that like,
that's right. Yeah.
These, kind of the distance that is, ingrained into our minds about these places that are very far away. You know what I mean? Like the separation that we feel from these places is a huge problem, you know, to our own ability to make progress in the United States. And so I think that like,
And I mean, just to add to that, just like Skinner said, I mean, the pandemic has sort of like accelerated that and sort of like made it even worse, because we feel so far apart. And then connecting to other filmmakers that you might meet at a festival or somewhere else, it's kind of hard to do that right now.
But it isn't not just it. I just want to add that it's not just about filmmakers meeting filmmakers. It's also that this crisis of being separated plays out within the whole media, within the whole community of film critics, of festival makers. Like, it's so... Think back in time in when there was so many film books, so many books about and I don't mean necessarily scientific books. I mean popular books, who were it's so little. There is not much anymore going on, and to write, it's so hard to survive writing about films. And it's so important to write about films, because that is how people can connect, how you find a common language. And criticism has become something like, that's a good movie and that's a bad movie, and you go to the good movie, and the bad movie, well, put it in the bin or wherever. That is not criticism to me. My idea of criticism is to open up a film and to discuss the ideas who lie within the story, the narrative, and the form itself. Like, is it about memory? Like, both of your films, that is something that really touched me. That the use of, especially in your short film, Skinner, and in Residue, how you're using images of memory in a very common way, that are short glimpses of something that is coming into your head, and it's kind of a melancholic anger that feeds both of your films. And to discover that and connect something like that is, we all working together to find a way of bringing all those people from different countries together. When we identify something like melancholic anger or a certain way of form, because form is so important. Form is not just a three-act. It is an expression of life itself.
Yeah, I think stuff like this too, having these conversations help too. You know what I'm saying? Like, being able to reach audiences in other countries. I think some people are just not aware, right? And if you make them aware, maybe they'll do a little bit deeper digging on wanting to seek out these types of films from other artists. But it's, again, we're all fighting this big conglomerate corporatization like system, even as a film critic, as a filmmaker, as an audience member, as a podcast, as a book writer. Like, I mean, it's so, it's a problem. You know what I'm saying? Like, I write novels, and the same, I come up, you know, I write stuff that I was told, like, oh, you can't kill white politicians in your books. You know what I'm saying? Like, the publishing industry is the same, has the same issues that Hollywood has, you know? So,
do that.
But you can show the slaughter of black and brown people in these white films and have white actors say all kinds of things. And that's okay. But if I show, you know, I have this film that I want to make about Frank Embry. He was lynched. I made a short about it. I have a feature. And in that movie, you know, during the white people in the church having this sermon about how God has ordained slavery, they get burned alive. It's very, very hard for me to get money for that movie from white people. Right? So, but that ending's not going to change. But yet Tarantino can have black people getting eaten by dogs, and that's amazing. You know, I don't know, there's definitely a double,
and he's able to sell it as very subversive.
It's like, so I don't know where I was going with that, but yeah,
I think that we shouldn't be so pessimistic about it. I mean, there is not, I mean, I'm usually a very pessimistic person, and I don't see, I'm very critical about the present, but this conversation we are having right now, and we had for the past hour, is something that gives me hope in a way that you find a common language. Because I mean, it's when I said that most of the films and your films are not, most of the people in Germany are not able to see your movies. and that we are coming together and talk about it and dig deep through all this economical, aesthetical issues, that is real, that gives me hope to find ways and opening up ways to give space for another expression.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, no, I was going to say that I agree. I think that like generally I'm encouraged by like kind of what's going on. And although Skinner, I feel you 100%, like that shit is frustrating as hell. At the same time, like you can't expect them to like finance their own demise. You know what I'm saying? And I think that like ultimately,
of course,
even on this COVID thing, you know, I think that like while it has made, you know, in-person communication and like building, you know, more difficult, I think it's also just kind of created conditions for like, you know, that makes those things even more necessary. And that makes people feel the need even more to like come together. And I think that like the pressures that like people are feeling through COVID, through all this, like, you know, the financial crisis that is bringing about, you know, the lack of like government, you know, the US's ability to like do anything about it. Like all these things are like, despite the physical kind of like separation is basically creating the conditions for like people to want to do those things more. And I think that like, growing up in the 90s and even like early 2000s, I remember feeling like, man, like, you know, this is the world, this is how it is. And like, this is how it'll always be. Even myself, I was totally just, I could care less about like joining any kind of like organization or like, you know what I'm saying? Like any type of like collective, anything. It was always about like, how can I as an individual, you know, do this or do that and shit like that. And I think that like, we basically like survived a very, you know, repressive moment in time, you know what I mean? Of just like, you know, kind of like the US just kind of like, what made it seem like relative, you know, kind of like, at the risk of like sounding stupid as hell, like relative peace, at least in the United States, you know what I'm saying? Made it seem like shit was stable, you know what I mean? And like now it's clearly not stable, you know? And I think that like, so I just think that like all those things are like signs of like change being necessary, you know what I'm saying? Necessitating kind of like these changes in all aspects, especially in film, you know? And now the technology is only supporting that. The more like repressive the technology gets and is used against us, like the more actual like these technologies we can also use to our own benefit, you know, the more shit that they develop to like, and you know, further our isolation and whatever, you know, like Facebook is depressing. Instagram is depressing the hell out of people, you know, but at the same time it is, you know, in its raw form, and you know, a technology that we can use to like help us organize, you know what I mean? I think that like
I was just gonna say, like, because Sebastian was talking about like how your films are not necessarily accessible any longer in Germany, so I was just thinking, like, we've been talking about communities and we've been talking about uniting, and then also, I mean, obviously you cannot compare like a Black experience in Germany or Europe with a Black experience in the United States. But I think it would be so important to sort of like unite as well, transatlantic wise, in a way, to sort of like make your films more accessible over here as well, and have conversations like we have right now, but maybe not necessarily two white people having to interview the two of you, but, you know, like sort of like,
because
exactly, because I mean it's a huge topic in Germany right now as well, and we are far behind you guys, but still, I mean, it would be so important to sort of like have those kind of conversations over here as well, because you know, in a sustainable way,
because most of the time it's, there is a festival and then there is a Q&A and then there is a discussion, and the topic disappears after that. Completely. So I think we all need to work on a discourse, on a conversation that is more sustainable, that is going on for much longer time. Because even if we think that we have talked through about so many things in that hour, it is still not enough, because there are other people here in Germany, blacks, not blacks, other minorities, who have the same anger and the same frustration, and we need to find words we need to start a discourse that is going through all the identities. Because I mean, basically, when there are two whites talking with two black guys, and there is an ocean between us, but there are so many things where we come together and find ways of understanding. But that has happened so much more. And there is one, because we talk so much about capitalism, there is, because, well, I'm dropping another philosopher because I studied philosophy, but actually it is a very clever thought that Alain Badiou once dropped. He said that capitalism, and that is not a big surprise, capitalism is so clever in sucking out the energy of all subversive, of all revolutionary acts by selling it, by cutting it in little pieces and selling it. So the Nirvana shirt at your store next door is one aspect of it, but or a magazine for
the Che poster,
yeah, all that. But it even get worse, because it's you get addressed so stereotypically, which is kind of giving the impression that everything is stable because you can consume. And I think that film, most people are consuming film, and that what we are talking about is being confronted with something by watching it. And that is something people have to learn, because watching a film has to be learned. It has to be... I like to say that a good film teaches me to see within seeing. And that is, I think, we should discover more by talking.
Like Kwame Ture says, the goal is to make the unconscious conscious. If we can do that with our film work, that's important, you know?
I think we should come together when your next big projects are on the rise or on the or being published or on the on the festival tour, whatever, and find ways to bring other people in in the conversation. Cool. That would be great.
That'd be nice. Down. I'm down for that.
Is that my cue now? Munich is a beautiful city, you know. Merabi really enjoyed it. He wants to come back. Shani wants to come back.
Julia, we can do that. We definitely can do that. I think that Christoph is also likes the idea a lot. I like it as well. And I enjoyed talking to you a lot. I don't know how you feel, but I'm getting a little bit tired and my head's just
Are you kicking us out?
No, I'm not kicking you out, but I think we should stop the recording. We could still sit together and talk, but I'm getting a little bit slow in my brain.
I do have to take my kids to the museum. I promised I would take them today. So,
which museum y'all going to?
It's an airplane museum. It's the only thing that's open right now, but my kids are really restless and it's in Denver, so I got to drive like 35-40 minutes to get over there. But this has been a lot
and
of fun.
Have a lot
we
of
can
fun
do it again.
I
could talk all day, but, you know.
I see some food. Yeah, hell yeah. This is good.
We should definitely do that.
Appreciate y'all fun. Having us on.
That was fun.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. And
Dankeschön.
Bitteschön. We have to thank. We have to say thank you and thank you, Julia. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you, guys, for being here.
dann möchte ich mich an dieser Stelle nur noch verabschieden und hoffe, dass wir uns beim nächsten Mal wiederhören, bei der nächsten Episode der Projektion.